So we are here in United States v. Grassi. Am I pronouncing that right?
Gracie.
Now, counsel, before we proceed, we are aware that many of the filings in this case were marked confidential and under seal. This is obviously an open court. Are both parties at this time comfortable proceeding in open court? Do we believe we can do it at a high enough level that I don't need to clear the court? Both parties agree?
Yes, Your Honor. We'll be waiting
for the Then we will first hear from Mr. Yankelunas. Did I get that right? Okay. And my understanding is that you reserved 3 minutes.
Yes. Okay. May it please the court, and Yankelunas for the prosecutor, Gracie. Two fundamental problems, as we see it, with respect to the Judge Nacken's ruling. Number one, the court proceeds under the assumption that the All Writs Act provides authority without any restriction under the Hanging Injunction Act. Also, the court proceeded in secret, and we think that's troubling. Not just troubling, but it's incorrect. But first of all, with regard to the All Writs Act, the court has indicated in the Shuffling case, both statutes need to be read in tandem. They were enacted on the same date. They were amended on the same date. The judge should not have ruled on the basis of the Leader Materials case, which I understand is, of course, an important case. But the judge proceeds as if it provides a blanket that states that the Antitrust Act is never a restriction on the All Writs Act. But the problem with that judge is that it wouldn't account for this court's decision in the U.S. versus Shuffling case, which is a 2013 case in which the government was the movement and the court rejected the application for injunction. In that case, the court made clear that the government may not satisfy the native jurisdiction exception under the statute. The court made clear that in order to have the benefit of that exception, the government had to show that the state court proceeding on an in-rem claim, which is not the case here. The state court case is a defamation case. My client's been indicted. I recognize that. But the Leader case does not rely on the mandate rule of the court that the Judge Sinatra ruled upon.
I'm sorry, are you asking us to develop a per se rule that the Anti-Injunction Act does not apply to the United States unless it involves
no,
a res?
I'm not just, no. Okay. What I'm saying, though, is that the All Writs Act does not provide a blanket authority to ignore the Anti-Injunction Act. That's, I think, how that's how Judge Sinatra presented for a rule on this matter, and that can't be right. Because, as I've indicated, the Lieberman case involved national interests. I think there's a limitation in that respect. The Lieberman case involved the need to defend federal interest in state court proceedings.
Is there a federal interest in making sure that witnesses aren't intimidated?
If, in fact, we knew that they were intimidated, Judge, we don't know that. And that's one of our fundamental, one of the fundamental problems with this case. The government has presented the media application ex parte, as far as we know, talking about potential intimidation of witnesses, while talking about potential abuse of discovery, but we've never been apprised of those facts. The government has the absolute word to make a particularized showing of the need for the injunction. We have an obligation, I'm sorry, Judge, we have certainly a right to challenge that showing. So to this day, I have no idea what they presented to Judge Snyder. And a civil claim is a property interest. It may not be the most interesting case in the world, granted, but it's still a civil claim. The Fifth Amendment protects that property interest. The plaintiff, the appellant was entitled to know.
If you can sue somebody on the ground that they provided information to the FBI to your detriment, wouldn't that have an intimidating effect? I mean, it's not very nice to be sued, and it's pretty expensive to defend. So wouldn't it naturally have an intimidating effect?
If you... The court, and I'm talking about this court, I'm talking about Judge Sinatra. Certainly the federal government has prejudged the merit of that claim. The court, the federal government has prejudged our client's criminal liability. That's why it's such an important burden on the government's part to demonstrate the need for this injunction. I understand the claim.
Well, if the need for it entails the government's present thinking about possible criminal proceedings and how it might be proven, why wouldn't it be appropriate for that to be presented to the district court in camera?
We still have no opportunity to challenge what's being presented. And that's a fundamental right. And I think it's recognized as a due process right. It's, I understand, Judge, that the government has taken a position that there is potential, the key word is potential, for you to discovery in the state court case to aid the defense in the criminal case. But maybe that's true. It could very well be true, but we're entitled to know. We're entitled to challenge it. And we haven't had that opportunity. And that's really, there's two fundamental problems with this case, and I'll reiterate them. Number one, no, I'm not saying there's a blanket rule, providing for the inability to use the antitrust, August statute. But the court has to recognize there's a limitation. Otherwise, there's no way to account for the Sherman case. In Sherman, the government was the movement. The motion was denied. If there's a general rule...
Are you offering us a limitation, though, sir? Like, what is the limitation? Like, how do we know when the line is between the federal government seeking a tactical advantage or attempting to protect its an investigation and witnesses?
Well...
Because presumably... A showing was made to the district court, and the district court was persuaded. So, where's the line for us as a matter of law to say that the district court messed up?
There's been some showing that using the language of both the Always Act and the exceptional language of the injunction, in some manner, this application is required to aid the court's jurisdiction. Presumably, that means the court's jurisdiction in the criminal matter, the federal court's jurisdiction in the criminal matter. And I'm seeing, Judge, you might be right, but I still don't know exactly to this moment what was presented. And I think that's incorrect. It's wrong. It's unconstitutional. And we have the right to confront witnesses. We have to confront, right to confront adverse information. We haven't had that opportunity.
Right, but the tie is not what you can't confront here. It's a question of whether or not you have to put on hold a civil defamation act in another matter, right? I mean, there's a difference between not knowing when someone is being charged what they're being charged of. In this instance, where the government was seeking to have a civil case stop until the criminal case proceeded. Right? Isn't that a little bit different than not knowing how to defend yourself in a criminal case, which is what the analogy that I'm hearing you appeal to?
Not knowing what's being used to prevent the progress of a civil case is just as problematic. Civil case is a right of property. I'm absolutely sure of that. It may not be the most, as I said, it may not be the most exciting thing in the world, but this court, Judge Sinatra, nor the government, should prejudge the merit of that case. That's what I think has been going on. Also, I think that there's been a prejudgment of our client's criminal liability. Granted, it's a serious charge, but doesn't mean it's civil case should proceed.
We good? Okay, thank you. We'll hear from you on rebuttal. Ms. Gregory.
morning. May it please the court, Catherine Gregory representing the United States. The district court acted within its discretion when it accepted the motion ex parte and when it issued the temporary injunction barring state court action. The Albrights Act allows for this kind of injunction. It's a statute that fills the gap, according to the Supreme Court, where other statutes would be inadequate.
Well, saying it fills the gap indicates that this, you're relying on something in a statute that isn't there.
Yes, and here the alternative statute that we put forward and we discussed with Justice Dotcher and analyzed is 18 U.S.C. 1514, which allows for the remedy the government was seeking, which is to enjoin state court action to prevent threats and intimidation. However, the method by which that statute requires that leave requires a hearing. And based on the nature of the materials that the government was using, Judge Tanaka pointed out this included grand jury materials, that simply wasn't an option given the rules around grand jury secrecy.
The All Writs Act has to be in aid of the court's jurisdiction. What is this in aid of? I mean, if there's no case yet, if there was no case yet, what jurisdiction could the All Writs Act invocation here be in aid of?
Well, there was jurisdiction over the superseding indictment as a criminal case, and there is a protective order in place.
So the superseding indictment had been filed?
So the civil action was filed before Mr. Derice was named the second superseding indictment.
But the question is, at the time that the injunction was issued, what was it in aid of? What proceeding was it in aid of?
The ongoing criminal case.
The indictment had been filed.
Correct. An indictment had been filed, and I think we outlined the exact timeline in our brief, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I apologize for not having the dates offhand, but what happened was there was an additional indictment with some of the other co-conspirators. Mr. Derice was an unnamed co-conspirator. Mm-hmm. This action was initiated. He was then named as a co-conspirator in that indictment, and the government moved it from April 2021 to enjoin state court action.
So it's in aid of a proceeding that had been initiated, and even though it did not name Mr. Geraci, anyone could conclude that he was an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yes, and as we noted in our brief, there have been some other actions that have taken place, investigative actions of Mr. Geraci's identity
that we haven't been aware of. Counsel, I'm sorry, Mr. Geraci is added to the second superseding indictment in February of 2021, and the motion for an injunction is April 2021, is that right?
That sounds correct, Your Honor.
Yes. All right, so at the time the civil action is filed, Mr. Geraci has not been named in an indictment, but the argument is it's apparent that he's a target of the investigation or a subject of interest, whereas by the time the motion for an injunction is filed, he has in fact been named in the indictment.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Just until the end of these criminal proceedings. And as of right now, this is currently scheduled for trial in June of this year. The injunction was necessary for all of the reasons outlined in Judge Tanaka's opinion. Generally speaking, being avoiding threats and intimidation of potential witnesses, generally being protection of grand jury secrecy, and of course, potential abuse of criminal discovery process. And as Judge Sinatra noted in his order, if Mr. Geraci is entitled to any of these materials, he'll get them according to the scheduling order that the district has put out, as well as the protective order that's currently in place. And finally, it was necessary to do this ex parte, again, because of the nature of the materials that the government attached to the motion. Ex parte filings are permitted by the federal rules, they're contemplated, and in this case, Judge Sinatra allowed an avenue for Mr. Geraci to challenge the order that he issued, which Mr. Grace took advantage of, I believe, the third time that the order was renewed.
So one of the things that I'm troubled with is that two things that one would hope would be rare happened at the same time. I mean, one is ex parte paper being filed, and then the other was the injunction of a state court. Now, do we have any cases in which both of those rather unusual or extraordinary or rare things happen together? Like, I didn't find one.
I have also not been able to find any. I don't believe Judge Sinatra was either. There is somewhat similar to the circuit case where they were talking about the
So you have like two powerful tools being done together. Where are the limits on what the government can do in this instance? How do we prevent abuse?
Well, the standard for judge infractions is abuse of discretion. So the question is, we have to look again at this holistically, I think, because if the nature of the materials that the government had to attach and offer to Judge Sinatra were not what they were, did not involve grand jury materials and other materials, perhaps it may not have been necessary to go ex parte, and perhaps Judge Sinatra may not have allowed it to be filed ex parte. If this were not such an unusual and extraordinary action to, 4 years after the alleged conduct, file a civil suit against people that Mr. Jury believes to be witnesses and all of the reasons he keeps in the memory, perhaps the injunction may not have been necessary. It's a very unusual case. I will surely grant your honor that, but that's why I think the standard here on both counts, the ex parte aspect and the injunction aspect, is abuse of discretion. So what are the alternatives here? What did the government proffer? What was attached to the government? What are the rules regarding grand jury secrecy? And was this an efficient judge to not just discretion? I submit that it was not. Unless the panel has any further questions, we ask that you affirm the district court's decision and order.
Just one big comment, Your Honors. You asked if there is a per se rule the court is asking me to argue about. I think what the court would have to do in order to affirm Judge Sinatra's ruling is to change the per se that exists in the Sherman case. The per se rule would be, in order to use the innate jurisdiction exception, the government has to be talking about some kind of state court proceeding where the government's in remnant reserve. That's not certainly not the case here. The court in that case specifically said that if the state court case is merely a persona proceeding, a case where liability is stake, then that doesn't consist of any jurisdiction. And again, any jurisdiction, there's been an indictment, there isn't a case proceeding yet. But unless the court has any other questions, we may not come through. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you so much. We'll take it under advisement. And then